mind if you let me cool you one time. You'd be my regular stab. All right, boys. Now put my vanilla Dixie cups. Oh, flavors and bullshit to have your eyes remain. Stop you in a fancy vibe. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed satisfied.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, November 17th, 2017. We're a couple days away from the Green Bay Packers. Wow, look, it's the end of the week, and I just can't even speak anymore, Tom. The Green Bay Packers taking on the Baltimore Ravens Sunday at noon at Lambeau Field. High temperature, 31 degrees. Wind gusts up to 20 miles per hour. It's essentially winter here in northeast Wisconsin, and I'm not ready for it, Tom. I'm not ready.
No, I'm already coughing and wheezing. It's cold season. I got to do everything I can avoid that. And the Packers have to avoid freezing up in the cold. You know, they haven't played in it either. You know, Baltimore's in the same boat. So it's that time of year. It happens. Deal with it.
Nothing really new on the injury or news front from Thursday. Backup guard Lucas Patrick was added to the injury report with a back problem as a limited participant. But other than that, everything was the same. The Packers didn't make any roster moves Thursday, so they still have not elevated Jason Spriggs yet. And they still have Brian Bulaga, who will eventually be placed on IR. So, in effect, two open roster spots when you talk about Bulaga and the departed Martellus Bennett. So nothing really new there. Might as well jump right into the matchups. Do you want to start with Packers offense or Packers defense?
Let's start with the offense.
Okay, so, you know, the trademark of Baltimore, obviously, in this last, you know, 10 years or so has been their defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think this unit is necessarily as good as some of the ones they had at their best, but I still think there's some ability to cause some problems. And when you look at the unit and the guys that they have, what jumps out to you first?
Well, they're a hard-hitting. They're their typical Baltimore self, which is they're going to be big in the front. Their front four is going to be very big. Their corners are going to be good, and their linebackers are going to hit hard. And that's pretty much linebackers and safeties are going to be hitters. So pretty much you're dealing with a very physical unit. You're dealing with the guy who, defensive coordinator, Dean Pease, who worked under Bill Belichick and can throw all kinds of different fronts at you, can basically come up with a new game plan that you might not be ready for week to week. And he's had 2 weeks to prepare for Hundley. So I expect it to be a really tough Baltimore defense. You know, they've given up some big plays, but they lead the league in interceptions.
18 total turnovers forced.
Yeah, and they, you know, they're right up there in pass defense. They're a good, solid team. They just don't always play all that well. I mean, they have some moments.
So like you said, they're big up front. It's a base 3-4 defense. They actually do a decent amount of the 4-3 stack kind of stuff that the Packers do by moving Clay Matthews off the line. They'll do that with one of their outside linebackers. But when you look up front, I think still, even at age 35, people look at Terrell Suggs as the leader of this defense, and he's leading the team in sacks right now with 5.5. You know, what do you think the Ravens will try and do with Suggs against either Bakhtiari or McCray at right tackle?
Well, a lot of it depends on what the Packers do. If the Packers play a lot of double tight ends, they might have to play it a little bit differently. I think they'll play their defense. I think we'll see some different fronts than what the Packers have been used to, but Suggs will move around. You know, if I'm them, I would test Justin McCray just because Bakhtiari is your best pass blocker, and McCray's got to continually prove himself week after week in pass blocking. But you don't want to completely change your scheme and make it predictable where Suggs is going to be, because then you can just line a tight end over there every single down and double team him. So I think you'll see a lot of fluctuation. with their fronts. I think you'll see linebackers coming up and back and mugging the line of scrimmage and everything they can to fool Hundley.
You know, the guy on the other side that will probably get a decent amount of playing time is a really young player, Matthew Judon from Grand Valley State. He was a fifth-round pick in 2016, and I went back and watched the Ravens' most recent game against the Titans, and boy, he is a really, really athletic kid. He shows up a lot, and so it's kind of a nice compliment to Suggs in that Suggs at this point in his career is going to win, you know, a lot on hands and power and brute strength, whereas, you know, on the other side they've got this young kid that can really play with speed and some quick twitch and things like that. In terms of the interior of the line, you know, they've got some big bodies with Michael Pierce and Brandon Williams, who is big for them. How do you see the interior for the Packers, Lane Taylor, Lindsley, and Jari Evans, you know, matching up against this front? And do you think the Packers can run the ball like they did in Chicago?
I think they're going to try. I think number one is running the ball. Now, the question is, are they going to spread out the Ravens and run it? And that was sort of their strategy back in the I think it was 02 or 03 when they played the Ravens in their right coming off their Super Bowl year, and they had that great defense, and they had Siragusa and Adams in the middle. And what they did was they forced those guys off the field by spreading them out and forcing them to play nickel and dime. And that could be the strategy on Sunday, is try to get Brandon Williams and Pierce off the field and make them, try to gas them by running. Also, you could keep them on the field and run a lot of no huddle and keep them from substituting.
Right, so get them fatigued a little bit.
Get their big guys fatigued, and so that could be part of the deal too. I think. It's really, you know, what McCarthy's feeling best about with his offense.
Now, based on what we've seen in practice so far, you know, there's no doubt Aaron Jones is out for this week. He is out for a few weeks with that MCL injury. Ty Montgomery did not practice for the second consecutive day on Thursday. I don't think he's going to play this weekend, just my gut feeling. So I think there's going to be a lot of Jamal Williams, similar to what there was in Chicago. And I think there's going to be the first introduction to Devontae Mays, their seventh-round pick from Utah State. Given what we've heard from the coaches and the assistant coaches who we spoke to Thursday night, what do you sort of see as the breakdown of how the running game could shake out this weekend?
Well, I think Jamal Williams will be the main guy unless Mays comes in during those plays that he plays and plays like Aaron Jones. You know, kind of that's how Aaron Jones won the spot. He got in there and he looked really good, and then the next thing you know, he's the starting running back. So it'll be Jamal Williams to start, heavy dose, and then I think you'll see Mays replace him in for a series, you know, and they'll see how he does, give him a rest. But I think for the most part it's going to be Jamal Williams.
And what about the potential to see another handful of snaps with Cobb as either a running back or a Wildcat quarterback?
I'm not bit nuts on all that kind of stuff. I think it's a waste of time. And
tell that to Ronnie Brown and the Dolphins,
yeah.
Spoon.
I mean, Cobb loves to do that, and they don't mind throwing some wrinkles at him. But I think this is a game where you let your offensive line try to just win the game. You have a good offensive line. Let them prove it.
Absolutely. And then when you look at the middle of this Baltimore defense, you know, I think they've got one of the better inside backers in the league right now, and CJ Mosley, a real tackle machine, a guy who's taken the ball away a couple times this year. And so when you look at a guy like that, that, you know, is savvy enough to, you know, make some plays in terms of forcing turnovers, I believe he has a couple interceptions this season. I think he has two. Is that a guy that is intelligent enough and talented enough where he could maybe cause some issues for Hundley in terms of disguise or, you know, keeping him in the pocket if Hundley decides to move a little bit. Is this a better inside backer than what Hundley's faced so far, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's a really good player. He's a good all-around player. Now, I would want to try to get Kendricks matched up on him.
Okay.
I would want to see if you can get him in single coverage against your tight ends or a back and stress him that way. He's going to be really good against the run. He's a guy you got to get out there and block. You have to come off your block, your double team, and get out there and get a body on him. But it's not easy because he's strong and instinctive and plays really hard. So he'll be a key to the whole thing. They have to find a way to put some pass responsibility in his plate and then try to take advantage of that because he's not the fastest guy there is.
Without Martellus Bennett, we saw a fairly even distribution of snaps between Kendricks and Richard Rodgers, and both guys chipped in a little bit on special teams as well. Do you get the sense that either guy is poised to take over and maybe make it more of a two-third, one-third split, or do you get the sense that it's kind of going to be closer to 50-50 on a week-to-week basis?
Yeah, I think it's 50-50. I think neither one of them is a great blocker, and so it's probably a matter of Kendricks gives you more in the passing game down the middle. Rodgers gives you a little more size, a little bigger target for Hundley. I don't think one of those guys is that much significantly better. I think Kendricks is better down the middle of the field. But from a blocking standpoint, neither one of them is Martellus Bennett, and they're going to have to really bring it in this game.
In the back end of the defense, the Ravens spent a lot of money in free agency. They brought in Brandon Carr from the Cowboys, Tony Jefferson from the Cardinals, and Eric Weddle, where was he last year, the Chargers?
He started out in San Diego, and then he went somewhere else after that. I forgot.
Okay, but anyway, a veteran player. And so essentially three of their four starters are guys that they brought in as unrestricted free agents, and then the fourth is Jimmy Smith, their really talented corner. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Smith hasn't practiced this week. Missed 2 days with an Achilles injury. I haven't seen anything out of Baltimore. Do you have any feel of whether or not he's going to go?
I don't. I know he's dealt with this all year long, and it may just be that they're resting him and that he'll be ready. He's not a guy who has to practice. He's an extremely skilled corner. If he doesn't play, that's definitely in the Packers' favor. The Ravens have had some injuries at corner, and they definitely need him. It would be something where, you know, Devontae Adams would be in position to have a pretty good game if Hundley can keep that chemistry going with him. So we'll keep an eye on that. In my head, I think that Smith's going to play, but you know, you never know. The way they hide these things, you just don't know.
Yeah, so you have Jimmy Smith at one corner, you have Brandon Carr, the ex-Cowboy, as I mentioned, at the other corner, and then the third guy that they've brought in is the rookie Marlon Humphrey. And mm-hmm. So you'd have to think that his playing time would go way up if Smith doesn't play. And the last time that the Packers played a team that trotted out a rookie corner consistently was in Dallas. Different quarterback because Rodgers was healthy, but they really took advantage of Jordan Lewis in that particular game.
Yeah. I mean, Humphrey's a much better player.
Yes.
I mean, higher draft pick and extremely skilled. But, yeah, they'll work on they can work on him if they want. I really think, though, when you're talking about Hundley, you're not really looking at matchups so much as you are just getting him to run the offense the way you want it. And so I don't know that you're sitting there targeting people. I think you're setting up plays, seeing how the defense goes up, you know, sets against it, and then you're trying to take whatever the best play is out of that. So
there was a lot of discussion during the week about, you know, sort of the, I don't know if blossoming is the right word, but at least growing relationship between Hundley and Davante Adams. You know, I think that there's definitely, no question, some benefits to an increased chemistry between those two guys because Adams is a very talented player. Do you think that there is also a flip side of that that says Hundley could become a little bit tunnel vision, so to speak, and kind of lock on to Adams a little bit?
A little bit. But I'm not sure that's a horrible thing. I mean, I think I wrote about this earlier in the year when Brett Favre was first starting out. He threw to Sterling Sharpe like 70% of the time. The guy had over 100 catches, and he just relied on him. And that's not a bad thing when you need a clutch play. I mean, you don't want to do it every single time, but if that's the guy who you really trust and you think you can get the ball to him where he can at least have a shot at it, go for it. You know, he's your best receiver. You got to get the ball in his hands. The big thing is you don't want to force it into double coverage a lot. If he's on single coverage, give him a chance. You know, throw it up there and give him a chance to go get the ball. Otherwise, you know, I mean, he's still, I think, Jordy Nelson's still a big target for him, and Cobb is too. He's hit Cobb on a couple of slants. He seems to have a nice rapport there with Cobb. So I don't think he's just hooking up with Adams. I think he just went to Adams in the clutch situation, and that's where you want to go.
In terms of you know, the ability of the Ravens defense to take the ball away, I do think that this is the week that Hundley's turnover streak stops. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to lose the game, but I just think that this is the type of defense that could force him into a mistake or, you know, a fumble or an interception or something.
Yeah, he's going to get hit, I think, and he's going to get pressure.
Yeah, so I think this is the week the interception streak probably snaps. Anything else you want to talk about in terms of the Packers' offense against the Ravens' defense before we flip over here?
No, I think that's it.
All right, so then when you look at the other side of the ball, you have a Ravens offense that obviously has a very experienced quarterback, Super Bowl winner, Super Bowl MVP, Joe Flacco, who has not played, you know, to that level at all so far this season. They have some decent playmakers at receiver with Macklin, Mike Wallace, and Breshad Perriman, the speedster. They have a couple tight ends that are not really down the field type guys, but decent possession players. And their offensive line, at least from what I saw against the Titans, was not bad at all. I thought they gave Flacco a pretty decent amount of time, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at this offense and you look at the struggles for Flacco, what do you think is the disconnect, or why is it gone south so quickly, seemingly?
Well, I don't know that it's been that quickly. I think he's been kind of on a downward trend ever since the Super Bowl, and I think he got hot during a key moment in his career and capitalized on it, and I just don't think he's the franchise quarterback that everybody made him out to be. He's a really good deep ball thrower. He has streaks, you know, where he'll get hot, but he throws a lot of interceptions. And, you know, the thing you have to do is just you have to get them into some long-distance situations because they want to pound the ball at you. And then, when they get in short yardage or whatever, they're going to take their shots down the field. And they got two really fast wide receivers, you know, even though they're not producing all that much, they still can heave it down there and they can beat you at any time. So that's kind of the dilemma. But really, you should pick this guy off at least once during the game, and you should be able to create some pressure against him. And you shouldn't really be dominated against the run. And I think that's really going to be on the Packers' defense. They need to shut Baltimore down. Baltimore has been held down to 7 points against Jacksonville, 9 Pittsburgh, 16 Minnesota. Now those are good defenses, but you know, that's the way you got to play them.
You mentioned the importance of the running game for Baltimore, so let's take a look at that a little bit. They found what turned out to be a pretty good player off the street in Alex Collins, mm-hmm. a guy that was drafted originally by the Seahawks and actually fumbled at Lambeau Field here last year when Christian Ringo forced a fumble.
Oh.
But he was discarded by the Seahawks. They cut him, and mm-hmm. the Ravens put him on their practice squad. And then they had some injuries, and they elevated him, and he's been really, really good for them. In terms of a guy, I think he's averaging over 5 yards a carry, isn't he?
5.6.
Yeah, 5.6 yards a carry, one of the best averages in the league. And they actually have a number of guys. So they've got Alex Collins, they've got Terrence West, the mm-hmm. old veteran. They've got Javorius Allen, more of a pass catcher. And all signs indicate that they will have Danny Woodhead available as well this week.
That could be big.
Yeah, that was what I was going to get to next. That, to me, would be... Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess Tariq Cohen's kind of similar to that player, too, mm-hmm. and he didn't bother him too much. But what I was going to say is that I feel like Woodhead, to me, is the type of guy that could stress Blake Martinez if they're able to isolate him mm-hmm. on that particular player. But then that's when it occurred to me that, you know, Cohen didn't really cause much of an issue for them in Chicago.
No, they played him pretty well. He did not cause a problem when they split him out. And I don't even remember how many times they did split him out. It didn't seem that much. Woodhead is really good out of the backfield, but what you have to do, I think, similar to with Cohen, is that when he lines up in the backfield, you got to bring some heat so that he's got to stay in and block. And then it becomes, okay, well, they'll release or call a screen, and you have to be ready for it. But I think if he's back there, I'm bringing Josh Jones, and I'm having him have to block Josh Jones or have Josh Jones mirror him coming out of the backfield. That's what I would do.
What did you think about how often Capers blitzed against the Bears, and is that something that is going to continue in terms of the high rate? Because they threw a lot of guys at Trubisky, and, you know, I know Capers, I remember, you know, back when I would do this podcast with Bob, he would say that there's times in third and long where Capers just can't help himself. He's going to send six guys or five guys or whatever. And I kind of got that feeling again against Chicago. Do you think he tries a similar strategy against Baltimore?
Well, I think some of it, again, is down in distance. He's pretty predictable in terms of his when he's going to start blitzing.
Yes.
And a lot of it is feel early on. You know, he'll throw some stuff on third down and then see how it goes. I thought, you know, with Chicago, he felt like with Kyle Long out of there that he had the ability to really cause some issues rushing up the middle. And he was right. I mean, they did. That was a problem for Chicago. So... you know, I mean, Baltimore, I think they probably have a better chance of handling it. But, you know, they're going to put pressure on Stanley, the second-year guy, the tackle, and see if they can get something off of him. Whether they blitz a ton, I think their first priority is going to be holding Collins down.
Yeah, I agree. And Collins is an interesting guy. I wrote about him at the Combine when he was there. That would have been, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is a guy that I first met during an internship that I had in college. He's from the Fort Lauderdale area, and I covered him a little bit when he was in high school.
Mm.
And then he was a guy that really, 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 really wanted to go to Wisconsin. He loved Bielema. Mm-hmm. And then Bielema went to Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
so Collins went to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a very interesting guy. He works his feet by doing Irish step dance.
Nah.
He's just got a really interesting backstory.
Wow.
And so it's a guy that I know a little bit, a big, powerful runner, and a guy that can make some moves in the hole. So that's going to be, I think, a little bit of a challenge because he sort of has a similar body type to what Jordan Howard did,
mm-hmm.
but more elusiveness, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I think, is something the Packers will need to keep an eye on.
He's also fumbled a couple times.
Yeah, too. And dating back to college, we talked about this the other day, just shooting the breeze here in the office. He fumbled, I think, 17 times in college.
Unbelievable.
Which is unreal.
Fumbled twice with the Seahawks as well.
So. Yeah, and in a very small number of carries.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't play much for them. In terms of the offensive line, as I mentioned earlier, I thought they actually played pretty well against Tennessee. Not that Tennessee has a ton of pass rush, mm-hmm. but I thought they played okay. You know, Stanley was okay, and, you know, I actually thought Howard did all right, you know, because they lost, who is it, Yanda?
Marshall Yanda's been out since, what, week two or something like that?
Right, and he's essentially a Pro Bowler every year,
he's
right?
He's one of the best guards in the league.
Yeah, so the interior of their line with James Hurst at left guard, Ryan Jensen at center, and Matt Skura at right guard, that's obviously their weakness. Mm-hmm. And so for Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, I think this is an opportunity for them to really try and, you know, get some stuff done there on the interior.
Yeah, and they're getting Quentin Dial back, who is a good run-stuffing guy who will give Kenny Clark a little bit of a rest, but also be able to go in there on base defense. I could see them playing a decent amount of base defense and just trying to shut down the run game. That's a real possibility, and then you know maybe you play Matthews in that stack 4-3 a little bit just to make sure that their running backs aren't beating you out in the flat. And then you know, you got Ahmad Brooks coming back. You got to get some pass rush going again. Perry's coming off a really good game, but they got to be consistent, and they need to win.
Who would you rather have in the base defense, Dean Lowry or Quentin Dial as the third guy alongside Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark?
I'd rather have Dial.
Me too.
I would want Lowry on a passing down.
Me too.
And Dial on running plays, because he's really good, and he's got really long arms, long reach.
I think he's strong,
big guy,
too.
He's strong.
He holds his ground well.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy you want in there against a real power running team. As long as he's healthy, you know, you could tell that he wasn't playing as well the last couple of games before they shut him down.
Yeah.
So we'll see how he is on Sunday.
Moving to the skill players a little bit, we'll talk about the receivers. We touched on it briefly. They've got a lot of speed in Perriman and Mike Wallace. And then they've got, you know, a guy that has some speed but is more of their quote-unquote possession guy in Macklin. When you look at those three guys, A, do you think that there's anybody that it makes sense for Kevin King to follow? And B, I know I saw you talking to Kevin King in the locker room on Thursday. How significant of a concern is his shoulder injury? I heard Dom Capers on Thursday say it was pretty clear that he couldn't use both arms against the Bears. And that kind of – the fact that he admitted that sort of took me by surprise a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of been that way all year where he can do – stuff with his left arm. I saw him even in the Bears game use his left arm to jam, but it's obviously not at full strength. I don't think it's absolutely hurt him. His tackling's been pretty good. He hurt it missing a tackle. I think the thing about him is we just don't know how bad it is and whether he'll play this week.
He did not come out and say he would play.
He did not say that. He kind of left it at, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Interesting.
So, yeah, if he doesn't play, even if he's a little bit one-armed, I think they lose a lot by not having him in the lineup. Josh Hawkins would probably be next in line. And, I mean, he's a good matchup from the speed standpoint against those receivers, but you know, you still want, if you're the Packers, you got to have King in the lineup, especially the way Devon House is playing. His lack of speed really showed in that deep ball that Trubisky throws. So either he's still hurting, or
that
he's
quad.
Lost a step.
Yeah. Well, I tried to ask Dom Capers. I said, do you think there's any reason why teams have gone after House in recent weeks? And I don't know if he just didn't want to answer the question or he didn't interpret it the way that I meant it. Mm-hmm. But his response was essentially that Devon, like I guess he only answered it in the context of the touchdown that Devon mm-hmm. gave up. And he said that Devon was actually in an okay position, but he stuttered for a second and then he couldn't recover fast enough to get downfield. And what I was sort of asking is more about the volume of targets that receivers he's covering have gotten in recent weeks, because I feel like against Detroit, I can picture a number of times when Golden Tate caught the ball and he was either a half step behind or a step behind. And then in Chicago, I mean, on a number of those slants to Inman and things like that, he was the guy in coverage the majority of the time. And so to me, it seems like at least a conscious effort by Trubisky and Stafford to go after him a little bit.
Or they're looking at the open guy and how this guy is open.
Also true.
I mean, that's the possibility too. Randall's been playing a lot better. He's got his guy wrapped up a lot of the time. Whenever I'm watching him, he's playing pretty good coverage.
Is there any chance they'd move him outside?
Well, they did last week, you know. I mean, if you're talking about in the nickel.
I'm talking about in the base. Put Randall and King.
Oh, Randall and
bench,
King.
Bench House in the base.
I don't think so. Not yet. I think they want to still give House a chance. I think they like his experience. I think they like that he's not going to blow coverages.
He's a pretty decent tackler, too.
Yeah, yeah. Randall is, you know, let's get like eight good games or eight decent games without him blowing up, you know, in a row. But they're probably saying this, you know, let's get eight games in and then we'll have more confidence to do what we want with him. But if they have King and Randall, maybe they start giving House a little bit more help, you know, and then let King and Randall kind of handle things one-on-one.
Is this, with as much as Baltimore is probably going to try and run the ball and as much as the Packers are going to try and stop the run, how does that change, do you think, the roles, if at all, for Clinton Dix and Josh Jones, assuming Burnett doesn't play because he still has not practiced either? Do you think that one of those guys comes down closer to the box, and does that eliminate the ability to give help on one side? Because I just think that there's so much speed that this is the type of game where it could be, I don't know. I just think that double moves could be an issue in this game with the speed that the Ravens have at receiver.
Yeah, I think you have to be aware of that. I think you know that Wallace is kind of a one-trick pony from that.
Right.
And Bashard Perriman has been really, really inconsistent and underproducing. So I wouldn't be that scared. If I'm them, I bring Josh Jones down into the box, and I say, you know, Clinton Dix will pick up the deep to short like he's supposed to, and you know, you trust your corners a little bit and get after Flacco. I think that's the best way you can do it. And I mean, you gotta, at some point, these guys have to play smart, and they have to know what the other guy's strengths are. And so I would definitely bring Jones down in the box.
One interesting thing, I think I saw a stat on Twitter earlier this week that said Flacco leads the league in passes completed to running backs. And their leading receiver right now is actually Javorius Allen with, I think, what do you got the stats here, 39 catches, it says?
Yep.
And so the Packers haven't really played a team like that, with the exception of the Saints and their ability to throw it to Kamara.
Yeah.
So, and that didn't go well for them. You know, the Kamara was able to get out in space.
Except on screen. Yeah, oh, you mean for the Packers.
It went very well for the Saints.
Yeah.
So for a team that struggles with screens, for a team that has shown that it struggles against a back that can get out in space, is that an area that you think the Ravens could really try and exploit?
Absolutely. You know, I would try to get these guys matched up if you can. Again, a lot of it kind of depends on if the Packers are getting to the quarterback, because then those guys got to stay in and block. If the Ravens are picking everything up and it's not a problem, then they're gonna throw to their backs. And a lot of it too is, you know, how quick can they get the ball out. So we'll see. We'll see how Capers handles that. But if I'm them, I want as much pressure on Flacco as I can get.
One personnel group that caught my eye when I watched that Ravens game against the Titans, and I don't know if they do this a lot during the season because I honestly haven't seen the Ravens play very much with the exception of that one game that I watched, but they had Alex Collins deep at tailback, and then sort of offset where a fullback would be, they had Javorius Allen. And so they had the ability to run it with Collins up the middle, and they had the ability to do some counter kind of stuff with Allen if they wanted to hand him the ball. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, they had the threat of a receiving tailback coming out of a fullback position, mm-hmm. which was kind of interesting. They didn't use it a ton against the Titans, but it did catch my eye as something that I haven't seen a whole lot of.
Yeah. Yeah, and Marty Morningweg, he's been around the block. You
know, the offensive coordinator? Yeah,
he was here for a while. He's a Holmgren disciple. I don't think they run all that much West Coast. I think they're typical Baltimore the way Harbaugh has wanted it, which is run the ball and work the deep game. But he's been around. He knows Capers. He's going to have some tricks up his sleeve, I'm pretty sure. And they'll try to out-scheme Capers, and that'll be, that's going to come down to, really it's going to come down to how well the Packers, how prepared they are and whether they get confused. When they're not confused, they're a better team.
We don't often talk about the opposing team's specialists, but I think with the Ravens, they're definitely worth mentioning. You talk about their punter, Sam Cook, their kicker, Justin Tucker, and even their long snapper, Morgan Cox, according to Ron Zook. Those three guys could be considered the best trio in the league. How big of weapons can they be for these guys?
Huge. I mean, they can win the field position game easily. Tucker can hit from anywhere. He's probably the best kicker in the game. They special teams is huge. I mean, John Harbaugh was a special teams coach under Andy Reid in Philadelphia, so he values special teams, and they're always good at it. So this is a case where the Packers better be ready, and they better be ready for some fakes too. These guys are gonna. They can pull off all kinds of stuff. And if you have a weakness, in your scheme, they're going to find it.
Yeah, Cook is a really talented punter. I remember reading a story. It was either last year or the year before. I think it was by Kevin Seifert from ESPN. He wrote about how Cook has all these weird ways that he can kick the ball. And basically Ron Zook summarized it a little bit when we talked to him Thursday. He said that what Cook has become really, really good at, and this is what the article said as well, is he can face his body in one direction mm-hmm. and kick the ball to the opposite side mm-hmm. of the field. And so essentially he's able to fool returners into thinking the ball is going to go one way and then it comes off his foot and goes the other. And so Zook said a lot of teams have combated that by putting two returners deep. I still don't think the Packers are going to do that necessarily.
Right.
But it's really sort of unique to Cook in the way he can kind of boomerang the ball in that sense. And you mentioned, the ability to run fakes. They ran one on the very first punt against the Titans. Cook pulled up and threw a 16-yard pass that was complete, just threw it to one of the gunners. The guy ran a curl route, and it was an easy first down.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and especially with Trevor Davis, you never know what you're going to get with him. Maybe Zook's going to just say, go fair catch the ball or let it drop. Just don't screw it up, They can't afford to have any turnovers on special teams.
Any chance they put Cobb back there?
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
I mean, we don't see a ton of special teams. We actually don't see any special teams in practice anymore. I wonder if at some point McCarthy's going to say enough is enough. And, Davis has tremendous speed, but Cobb's not going to screw up.
Maybe they in this game they do that. Zook is really high on Trevor Davis.
Yeah, he is.
And he probably keeps convincing McCarthy that they're really close to breaking one. So, I would think about it. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
All right. I think that's enough Ravens talk. Let's go to prediction time. I'll go first. Mm-hmm. I took the Packers this week. I had said all along that until I saw some glimmer of hope from Hundley that I wouldn't pick the Packers. And I think it was really important that his best play came in the fourth quarter last week. That's what he's going to remember going into this game. Whereas if it happened early in the game and then he played poorly late, you tend to remember what happened most recently. And I think that's going to be big for him. So I took the Packers 21-16. I think it'll be an ugly kind of slugfest game, but I think they can get it done. What do you think, Tom?
Okay. I'm going to go with the Ravens. I just feel like they've been up and down. They haven't played as well on the road as they have at home. But I just feel like they can make the afternoon really tough on Hundley. And I think You know, if Jimmy Smith doesn't play, that's a little bit different. But I still think they're going to make it really hard for the Packers to score. And I just almost never trust the Packers' defense, even against really what is not a great offense at all.
But even the Bears didn't have a great offense, and Trubisky played pretty darn well against them.
Yeah, and special teams is going to be a huge advantage in Baltimore's favor. So I just have a feeling with 2 weeks to prepare, they're going to be ready, and I think they're going to knock the Packers off.
All right, so there you have it. That is 40 minutes on the Baltimore Ravens, which I am really impressed about because we did not know too much about the Ravens coming into this week.
No, we did a little bit of studying. Who knows if we're even right with any of this stuff.
That's true. We could be totally wrong.
Yeah. So,
but it's too late because they already listened to this point.
Right. So
you're screwed anyway.
Yeah,
just believe us.
And I'll correct it all in the blog on Sundays.
Promote the live blog.
Okay. Come and listen to what the real truth is about these two teams and the blog on Sunday.
So check that out Sunday afternoon, noon kickoff at Lambeau Field. Until then, check out all of our coverage on JS Online and PackersNews.com. Thank you very much for tuning into this podcast, and we will talk to you guys soon.
See all my flavors again, cheetah satisfied.